From the Health Sciences campus at University of Southern California comes POP, an occasional series exploring perspectives on public health.
Welcome to POP, connecting community, research, and students, giving us a real-world perspective as told by those seen through the public health lens.
I'm your host, Karina Dominguez Gonzalez, an alumnus of the Master of Public Health program at USC. I'm also a research coordinator here in the Department of Preventive Medicine and Office for Social Justice.
So I'm so excited to get a chance to sit down and talk to you, finally. I heard about your work and your role in organizing the USC Black Lives Matter March, and I was so impressed with not only you, but your entire generation. So I truly feel that this generation is made up of agents of change who are so innovative and fearless, and I'm truly thankful to have you here today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about some of these things with you.
Yeah, it's so important. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself? What's your story?
Yeah, so my name is Etienne Kabwasa Green. I go by Kabwasa. I grew up in a small town called Watsonville, California, a sanctuary town. So it's made up of a majority Hispanic immigrants. A lot of undocumented immigrants live in Watsonville. And yeah, I'd say about probably like 98-99% Hispanic population. And so I grew up there, like learning a lot about like the social issues going on in America and how difficult it is for some people. And then on top of that, being like an African-American man, a Black man in the United States, I've faced like all of the, you know, the prejudices of, you know, racism on my own. So kind of growing up with all those things around me has like led me to coming to college and has led me to be kind of active in terms of things that matter to me that I've seen growing up. So, yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I feel like anti-Black racism is not just happening in the U.S. It's also happening all over the world. It also happens in little sanctuary communities like the one you're talking about, yeah, where you grew up. And it's a challenge that it's a challenge that we need to face now. It's a human rights movement. And it's, you know, it's important for us to push it through. I feel like for so many years we were passive about it. It's so nice to see that this generation has definitely been more aggressive in pushing it forward and very innovative. I keep saying that, but I truly feel that it's just so innovative, and I'm really proud to be around people like yourself, your generation.
Yeah, definitely.
I know COVID-19 exposed, you know, the health disparities in communities of color. The African-American community was hit hard in particular. What has been your experience or your family's healthcare experience? I know you talked about, you know, growing up in a small town. What was it like there?
Yeah, well, definitely. Luckily for me, I was able to have, you know, proper healthcare because, you know, my parents were able to afford the opportunity to go to college and to, you know, have those, be able to, you know, have like proper healthcare and stuff for us. But growing up in that small town, I was able to see like the amount of people that were affected by the lack of affordable healthcare for everyone. And like, especially like the undocumented immigrants and the parents of like my friends that were undocumented. And like when things happened, when tragedies happened, they were like not able to, you know, necessarily afford to find help. And even my own family, my grandpa immigrated from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. He wasn't even able to afford healthcare. So he was diagnosed with cancer, and it was a big scare for everyone. We had to all kind of pull together, try to help, because healthcare is just something that should be universal, but it's for so many people, it's extremely difficult to come by. So
yeah, that's definitely true. And I think we're seeing more of that now. Like, there's more attention on that. I think a lot of people felt that if we have Medi-Cal and Medicare, like, those people are being taken care of. But you truly don't think about people who are undocumented or people who are, you know, older or don't have the means to advocate for themselves, you know?
Yeah.
Coming from a small town, what brought you to USC?
I've had family in the LA area for quite some time. So I've always been like coming to LA like once or twice a year to visit family. And I've just been drawn to, it could also be that I was from a small town that I was just drawn to like the city kind of. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to, you know, be in LA and be surrounded by that. And then USC, from what I understood and from what I could see, it had a super close-knit and like strong Black community. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily to say that USC was the ones initiating or promoting that Black community, but the students within USC seemed to take it upon themselves to, you know, seek out other Black students and, you know, create that community aspect. So that was something I was drawn to. And being from a town where there wasn't very many Black people, I was like always one of the only Black people in my class and at my school. I really wanted to find a place where I could connect with people that I could relate to on issues that I'd grown up facing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely see that. I think there's a lot of leadership, Black student leadership at USC, and it's really nice to see, just to see them more. You know what I mean? Like just to see the presence, to see more events, to see more faculty of color get, you know, promoted or get hired. I feel like that's just so important for Black students or for students of color in general to see, you know, the person in the front of the classroom who looks like them teaching. That definitely like inspires, you know, us to be that or to even just to think that we can do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think I, in all my time in like in school, I don't think I've ever had a Black male teacher. I never had a Black male teacher or a Black male professor. I didn't actually have a Black professor or teacher at all until I came to USC and one of my anthropology professors was a Black woman. Yeah, it's definitely a big deal to be able to have somebody to look up to and to be inspired by. And I think if we can get more of that for, you know, young Black and brown people, I think it'd be crucial.
Yeah, that's definitely. So now that you've met leaders, student leaders at USC and you've become one, what have you learned about leadership?
Most that I've learned about leadership or the most important thing is that everyone has the potential to be a leader. There's no like one person's a leader and other people aren't. It's just a matter of taking a stance and doing like taking action. So, I mean, I've always been kind of like a loud person or a person that like speaks my mind, but I don't think I would consider myself a leader at USC or I would have considered myself a leader at USC. But I took it upon myself to like say what I wanted, I guess, or like be vocal. And then when other people see that, they also want those same things and they push your narrative and they help you. And I think like, yeah. And by that notion, like anyone can be a leader. You just have to, you know, be willing to put yourself out there. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. Of putting yourself out there. I think it also speaks to you guys like leaders being able to be vulnerable, you know, because with leadership, especially right now with the Black Lives Matter movement organizing and, you know, there's so much coverage that you really have to put yourself in a vulnerable position to be a leader in order to, you know, get your point across or to lead a team or to organize, you know, just now more than ever, I feel.
Yeah, definitely.
So now that you were at USC, so we came to USC, what was your experience?
You know, I'm definitely like, I'm proud to go to USC and I'm happy with like, I'm pretty happy with my experience. I would say there's like a few things that have been difficult in terms of being like Black. I wasn't immediately connected with all the like Black student population, mostly just because I was so disconnected with Black people for being the only Black person in my town for so long. Kind of like going in, I was like, the friends I was making and stuff, you know, I was trying my best to like kind of get into the Black community, but on the way there, the amount of like kind of people that like maybe hadn't met a Black person before, didn't know like what to say around Black people, or maybe just had some sort of microaggressions or prejudices. It was just kind of like a constant thing, to the point where, and I think all Black people or Black and brown people kind of face this almost to on a daily basis, and like face these like little microaggressions and things like that. And just kind of like getting through that or navigating that as a young adult is difficult sometimes, but for the most part, it was like little microaggressions. You try to just take them with a grain of salt, or try to fix them as they come, or try to attack them. You have to kind of be strategic about what you want to spend your energy on. So I guess just doing that for my time here, and I guess my time in Watsonville, and like my life in general.
Yeah, I feel like racism in America has finally been called, you know, a public health problem. And we definitely see the disparities among, you know, Black communities. I know there's definitely a disconnect when you go to these universities and you're coming from a small town. What has been your experience in terms of mental health?
Yeah, in terms, I've definitely had like things have been like so overwhelming that they just spark like extreme like anxiety, and even gets to the point of depression at times. And like, and it's just those like those microaggressions and the racism and the struggles that you have to face. And then especially even now, like basically for a lot of people, it's hard to see on the news that like somebody was, you know, like another Black person was murdered by the police and the police aren't being charged, or another Black person was like, you know, choked to death or abused or brutalized. And people see that and they're like, wow, that's tragic. But when you're a Black person and you see that, that could be you. And it almost feels like you're hurting and you're frustrated and you're tired of constantly seeing it over and over again and feeling just so helpless. Like there's nothing you can do. Just kind of like even in times where you're doing everything you possibly can and you're protesting and you're angry, you know, sometimes you don't want to be angry and you're tired. You don't want to protest and you've been doing it your whole life. You just wish that things could just be right and you don't have to do all this. And it's like those pictures of little girls and little boys, little Black boys and girls protesting with their signs and people saying this is so powerful. But no, it's sad. They shouldn't have to be protesting. They shouldn't be walking around with these picket signs. They should be happy, enjoying their childhood. So those are the things that just cause like health problems, mental health problems over the years, because it's just constant fighting for your life as a Black person when you shouldn't have to be. You should just be able to be happy sometimes. So yeah, I think those are the things that cause those kind of mental, you know, those anxieties that are like rampant through Black communities.
I recently listened to a lot of poetry, and there's a poet, and he was talking about, he has a poem about how being Black in America is a extreme sport.
Yeah.
And, you know, you wake up every day and the adrenaline rush when you get into your car and, you know, there's a cop car like right behind you and you're just constantly just like watching out, you know, and how much that affects you, and like coming back home at night and knowing that you made it, like the sigh of relief that gives you. And I just thought that was so like such a good just analogy for being a Black man in America, you know, like just, it's an extreme sport. And I can only imagine how hard that must be to think, dang, like that could be me next time, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So now let's talk about these protests. So I understand you played a big role in organizing the USC student march a couple weeks ago. Yeah. How did you become involved?
So basically, the protests had begun earlier, like maybe a week or 2 weeks beforehand. And I wanted to use my voice because I had developed, through my music, I developed a bit of a platform, mm-hmm. like on social media and stuff, where people would actually listen to me and like hear the things that I said. So I wanted to use that platform to say some of the things that needed to be said. So I made a song called Black Movement, put it up for everyone to hear, and people were like glad that it was posted, but I didn't feel like that was enough, like for me. And I knew there was a lot of protests going on downtown that were becoming really violent and scary. And for a lot of people, they didn't want to go there. They really wanted to speak and be heard, but just didn't want to face those bullets and those rubber bullets and tasers and things like that and tear gas. And I had a friend of mine reach out to me, and he said he was like conflicted and sad, like depressed, because he felt like a coward because he didn't want to go face those bullets. And I just felt like that shouldn't, we should find, make something that people can participate in and, you know, have their voices heard without having to risk their lives or feeling like they're risking their lives. So I talked to a few of my friends and I said, would you guys, if I made a Facebook event, would you guys go to a march with me if I put it together around USC? And they were like, yeah, you should do it. So I made a little Facebook event and then and said, you know, we're going to march around USC and we're going to use our privilege of being USC students who protect us, basically. So where everyone wear your USC gear, wear your, you know, your college t-shirts or anything you have, you know, and if there's like white people coming, like, you know, be next to like your black and brown friends and family, like, you know, let's protect each other. Let's use privilege to our advantage, because there's privileges involved in being a college student that other people don't necessarily have. Like a police, a LAPD officer is not going to come shoot a sea of USC college students walking around their campus with rubber bullets.
Right.
You know, so people can feel safe by that. Yeah. So I kind of wanted to do that. And then people were so excited about it that it kind of just picked up a lot of steam. And then I had some help from other people promoting it. BSA, the president of BSA ended up coming and helping me organize at other student-led organizations. And it ended up being something super huge and super helpful for people having their voices heard. And yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. I was there, and I definitely agree with you that there's privilege to being a college student. There's definitely privilege to being a USC college student. And just to have that as an identity is some sort of like protection. And definitely LAPD was not going to come through and do what they were doing elsewhere. So I'm just so impressed by your generation and the way you guys truly think. It's powerful to see yourself as, you know, not just like a black man, but like a black man who's also a college student, and that comes with privilege. Therefore, you're going to use that to help your community.
Exactly. Because there was other people. It wasn't just, there was far more people than just college students at that march. There was people from the outside community, and they're able to march in solidarity with us and in safety, because maybe if they went to a march in downtown, they might not have had that protection. So to giving the outside community a chance to hear. Yeah.
So I know you've talked about, you know, what drives you, what drove you, you know, to push this movement forward, but what like truly drives you like on a daily basis to be an agent of change? Because you talked about how exhausting it could be to like every day have to fight. Where do you reach from to continue this?
Yeah, I think for me, it's almost like, it's like second nature. Like I don't, when I stand up for something that I believe in, it's not, I don't make the conscious decision about like how this, like, will this hurt me? Like, am I going to be too exhausted by this? It's just kind of like, I see something wrong and I say something about it. And I don't think twice about whether I'm going to say something or not, usually. And I think that just is a part of who I am as a person and how I was raised. We're very adamant about being vocal. There's like pictures of me on my dad's shoulders holding a protest sign, marching against potential war back, you know, when like George Bush was in office and things like that.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's just always been a thing in my family. And if while I was over here organizing this protest at USC, my brother was in Watsonville or in Santa Cruz County leading a protest and speaking a big march. And my sister was in New York doing protests over there. So all of us kind of, it's just been installed in us that like we speak up and we stand up for what we believe in. So it's just kind of something that's, like being an agent of change is just a part of who I am and I guess who we are.
So you guys were on all coast protesting at the same time.
just spread around the country, just, you know, being loud.
Yeah. So that's another thing that I've definitely noticed, that it's different this time around. It's global. I mean, I saw protests in Australia, all over, like Sweden, in France, all over the place. And it truly like shone the light on racism as a global public health issue, not mm-hmm. just the U.S., you know? So why do you think these are different from what came before?
I think there's a few different things that added to why this movement has been one of the biggest movements in like the history of like humanity almost. But I think it's because it was kind of like a perfect storm. So like you have this Black Lives Matter movement that's been going on for years. It's been going on since like, I would say, I think Trayvon Martin was when it all started, and that was so long ago. It's been years and years that, you know, that the Black Lives Matter movement has been a thing, and it gains steam every time it picks back up. There's more people that are wanting to be involved. But this time we are all kind of, everyone was upset, right? And everyone's at home and no one's able to work. Everyone's just kind of trapped. And then you have three back to back to back innocent Black people being killed, unarmed Black people being killed. And, you know, with people already so frustrated and, you know, with time on their hands, they're just ready to, like, you know, get out there and be active. And that's kind of what we saw. And everyone kind of criticized the violence of the initial response. But if it wasn't for that type of angry response, you know, we would be in the same place that we were last time, because the same thing, this isn't new. These protests aren't new. We peacefully protested every year for the past 4 years that Trump's been in office, and we saw nothing. As soon as we come out aggressive and come out angry, that's when we start to see like actual changes, because they're like, oh, they're serious, when we've been serious the whole time. And then people try to like get mad and say like, you know, you shouldn't be so violent. But when we tried to be peaceful and, you know, peacefully take a knee and protest like Colin Kaepernick, it's, you know, you're just ignored. So, yeah, I think that kind of sparked, you know, a revolution. And then people wanting to express their voices and being tired and like coming together. And there's so many more allies now than there were before, you know, the like Mexican community and the, you know, white community, like people, there's allies, more allies now than there were ever before, to the point where the Black Lives Matter movement is bigger than the like anti-Black Lives Matter. So like there's more people that believe in Black Lives Matter and that are protesting with us than are against us. And it wasn't like that last time, you know, in the last few years that we tried this, you know. Yeah. And even businesses are seeing like, oh, it's because there's so many people for Black Lives Matter, it's more profitable to be kind to Black people and to treat Black people like humans than it is to not. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing changes in businesses and stuff because they're seeing, you know, the reality of the situation. And yeah, I think this is why it's such a huge thing and it's important.
You talked about how a lot of organizations, businesses, allies are, you know, starting to make changes in the way they do things. What are your thoughts around the changes that are being made?
Yeah, I think it's definitely progressive to see, and it's, you know, it feels like we're moving in a positive direction. At the same time, you have to think about how genuine the changes being made are, because there's a lot of companies and stuff that realize it's profitable to say Black Lives Matter. They don't have to actually do anything. So you have to kind of be able to distinguish between companies that are just doing it for profit and doing it because it looks good, and the ones that actually care and are actually making the changes, you know, hiring more Black employees, you know, paying people fair wages, things like this, donating to the, you know, movement. Those are the places. And, you know, we saw from USC, we marched, and that was student run, student led. And following that march, that's when we saw, you know, the removing of the VKC name of the building. Mm-hmm. The eugenics, the building that was named after the eugenics leader.
Yeah.
And yeah, we saw those like changes being made. We saw those real life things happening. And that's when you can legitimately say, okay, these changes are real and this is positive. So I think just pushing that and continuing to like hold people accountable, hold these companies accountable until they legitimately make those changes, I think is key. But yeah, it's definitely a positive thing. Regardless, we're headed in, you know, the right direction.
Yeah, definitely. So now that we have, you know, some changes already being made, what are some other changes that you would like to see in the future?
I mean, I'd like to see, like, for example, with colleges, having like a 5% Black population at your college is like great. Like your college has done their part in having 30% white, 30% Asian, you know, and then like a 4 or 5% Black is great because most colleges just have 1% or less. And I think to think that is where we run into problems. We need to like, it needs to be taken further. Like if there's 100% of a population, each type of person should be represented equally. Like, you know, it shouldn't be happy for the little bit of representation we have. We shouldn't stop there. So in the future, I'd just like to see these like minor changes become more major, you know, and just continue to progress from where we are, because we're nowhere near a solution or we're nowhere near an end point, you know. We're just kind of getting started here. So yeah, just continuing to see those changes grow from what they are now to what they should be.
Yeah. That brings me to my next question. So the future generation, the next one, what are your hopes for them? Let's say for your children.
Yeah. I would hope that they're able to, you know, grow up with no fear, without a fear for their life based on the fact that they're Black. And I think that's not something that we've achieved yet. Clearly, when you have these little 5 and 6 year old kids marching around the streets of LA with picket signs saying that my life matters, because right now these kids, these little kids are seeing that their life as we see it now, nobody cares about it. It doesn't matter. And like, they could be killed at any moment and may or may not get justice for it. I think that's what I would want to see in the future. I want to see kids to not have to pick it. I want to see like little Black kids to be able to play in the street and not fear for their life and just be happy, be able to just be a child and enjoy, you know, childhood. And I think that's the goal for what I would hope for the next generation, you know, and I'll like continue to fight until that's something that seems like a reality.
If you had one thing you would like people, allies, to actually do, what would that be?
I would say probably the one thing that I would push is to find a way to make, basically, we need to uplift the most oppressed and most underrepresented. I would say that is Black transgender women. And I would urge allies and everyone else to uplift that community. If we can uplift and make Black transgender women feel safe and feel like they belong and feel like they are loved, then, you know, I think we can make real change and real progress. So I think that would be the main thing, is to just do your best to, actually not do your best, but do your part, you know, make this world like a safe place for that most unrepresented person that has to fear for their life every single day they wake up. You can change things for them to where they can feel safe.
That's, I feel like that's very important. That's definitely a good message. Well, I think we're all done. Is there anything else you would like to add?
I think that's it. I mean, I'm just really thankful to have been able to be a part of everything going on. And I'm thankful for the, you know, the friends and family that have like supported in making this kind of movement what it is. I definitely didn't do that whole Black Lives Matter march by myself. I reached out to the people that I knew had, were powerful, that I knew had a voice, and, you know, they helped, you know, speak and make our voices heard. So I'm just really thankful and appreciative. And yeah, I'm just hoping that we can continue this and not let that kind of steam die off.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the concerns that people, or I heard people have, to not let it die out.
Yeah.
You know, but we definitely don't want to continue to see Black men being, you know, murdered by police to continue the movement. it should continue just based on what we've already seen.
Exactly.
So I just want to thank you so much for being here today. I know you're super busy, and with all the marches and protests and all this stuff that you're organizing. So I really want to thank you.
I'm happy to be able to, you know, speak with you.
The United States is not the only country facing these issues. Anti-Black racism is happening all over the world. We need to face this issue as a human rights movement that challenges systematic racism and racism in every context. This is important now more than ever, because this pandemic has further exposed the realities of communities of color, especially the Black community, who are subject to all sorts of disparities and some of the most challenging issues of our day. In terms of action, the conversation has begun. It has turned into action. It's great to sit here and listen to leaders like Kabwasa and have an open mind and shift our thinking, but that's not going to push the movement forward. To be an agent of change and take part in this historic and crucial movement, we must take an empathetic step forward in each other's shoes. This movement is crucial to the future of our world. And while those who have been fighting for equity their entire life take a breath and rest, it's up to us as their allies to carry not only the torch, but help light the fire. We need to carry this movement forward and continue the fight.
This series is brought to you by the Department of Preventive Medicine at Keck School of Medicine of USC, home to high-impact research and undergraduate, graduate, and doctoral programs training future leaders in the population and public health sciences. If you'd like to learn more, visit pm.usc.edu.